Thanks for listening to Reasonable Doubt on Podcast One.
The Adam Carolla Show is going on the road. Next stop, Nashville, Tennessee. Podcast One's Caitlin Bristow from Off the Vine is going to be joining me as well this Saturday. And we're doing a special live stream. If you want to watch the pod and be part of the action, check out livexlive.com and get the Live by Live app. It's all happening this weekend, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 Pacific. My Houston show had over a million views, and I'd be stoked if this one could surpass that number so we can do that with you. So it's going to be a great show. Make sure you tune in this Saturday, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 Pacific. Check out livexlive.com or download the Live by Live app.
For just $25, you get wine and gifts. Ace's favorite stuff or products from HDS. Every single month, you get the drink you choose. It's hard to beat cool stuff and booze. Adam's Monthly Nut. Adam's Monthly Nut.
The evil bitch that is coronavirus may still be raging outside, but Carolla Drinks is hard at work with another month of Adam's Monthly Nut. This month includes a Beard Bro beard-shaping tool to tame that unruly corona facial hair, and a Chew face mask so you can silently protest how f***ing stupid all of this is, a 6-foot premium beer bong by beerbong.com, so you can slug back a few cold, endless rants when the world officially opens up again. And of course, a bottle of your choice. We know times are tough, but we at Carolla Drinks are here to remind you to take a breath, have a drink, and wait for all this shit to be over. Mahalo.
Well, a great hour planned for you guys, of course, in this Reasonable Doubt episode. We'll get into it with Kaepernick and some of Garagus's other clients as well, like Ice Cube. And also some Flynn updates and some interesting thoughts on that. First, I'll tell you about Tommy John trying to find the perfect Father's Day gift. Well, it can be stressful, not if you give him the softest, most breathable fabrics and underwear and undershirts and loungewear. It is Tommy John, man. New and improved underwear, twice as durable as the current pair. Which ones am I wearing? Oh, I'm wearing mine right now. Got the cloverleaf one on. 25% off site-wide. You really should get yourself some Tommy John. If you are listening to me and you don't have them, I don't know what's wrong with you. I've been telling you for a long time, this stuff is the best. And get it for Dad. It'll go right to Dad's door. You can save yourself 25%. You can order over your phone, go right to your dad's door. Order now before June 17th, ensure arrival before Father's Day. It's the best pair you'll ever wear, or it's free, guarantee. It's Tommy John, right, Gary?
That's right. Tommy John has the perfect gift for all the dads in your life. Deliver comfort to dad's door with 25% off site-wide at TommyJohn.com/Adam. That's TommyJohn.com/Adam for 25% off site-wide. See site for details.
This is Carolla Digital. This is Reasonable Doubt with your hosts, Mark Garagus and Adam Carolla.
Hey, just so you understand, sometimes when we think there's something's breaking, Gary and I often, and Adam when he's around, will do a fresher or a tease or a topper, and that's what we're doing today. One of the reasons was is for all of you who are in the weeds or not on the Flynn case, interestingly today, they did the oral arguments in front of the D.C. Circuit. And I know that we did talk about that in the episode, but now fresh from listening to that, I can tell you, first of all, it's worth a listen because the Arguments are fascinating to anyone who's followed this case. And for those of you who aren't in the weeds, let me tell you that basically what General Flynn's lawyer, Sidney Powell, was asking for is for the D.C. Circuit Court, it's the Court of Appeals, to order by way of a mandamus, which is, you know, basically mandating to the Judge Sullivan at the district court that he go forward and grant the DOJ's motion to dismiss the indictment against General Flynn. The arguments today are basically, to me, a little bit of a surprise. Normally, you would never get any action on going to the district court. Here they issued an order. Given the composition of the district court, I fully expected a 2-1 decision would be forthcoming, ordering him to dismiss. However, it was clear, at least to me, from by reading the tea leaves of the questions, that the three judges, are struggling with this idea that the judge is basically, Judge Sullivan is just a rubber stamp, which is something I've always thought that one of the reasons why this is a fascinating issue is that there is a case which is called F-O-K-K-E-R, Fucker, as I like to say. And the Fucker case basically says that due to the constitutional separation of powers, that it is the executive, in this case, the DOJ's position, and their wherewithal to dismiss when they want to dismiss. The interesting twist, obviously, is that here you've got somebody who was under oath not once but twice, meaning Flynn, General Flynn, admitting and conceding and articulating the factual basis. And so whether or not you want to say that there was or are reasons for the Department of Justice's turnaround, the judge himself, and I've always thought there would be an issue with this. Gary, I think you'd back me up on this. I predicted when everybody was saying, oh, it's dismissed or this or that, I said, hold on, I don't think you understand what goes on.
I believe you said the judge was an independent thinker about 6 weeks ago, and that one really caught my interest.
Yeah, and he is, and rightfully so, because the reason that I called you and said we should freshen this up a little bit is even the Trump-appointed judge, Judge Rao, had asked the question of if basically what the general is saying, the general's lawyer is saying, is are the judges just a rubber stamp, especially in an instance where here this judge has had numerous filings, has a great familiarity with the supposed facts of this case, and also presided over the trial of Ted Stevens, the former U.S. senator from Alaska, who was convicted and then the case was thrown out for prosecutorial misconduct. So it just never seemed to me that this was going to be a very smooth dismissal by the DOJ. And based on what I heard today and the questions that I heard today, it would not surprise me in the least that they do one of three things. They either press pause, meaning don't do the issue a writ of mandamus, or they kick the writ of mandamus decision over past July 16th, which I believe is the date that has been set for a hearing.
Yes.
On
yes.
Judge. Is that right, Gary?
July 16th? Right.
Yeah. I would be very surprised if before July 16th, based on the questioning and the arguments today, if you got a DC Circuit order of mandamus that he comply with the DOJ and dismiss. I think they're going to allow him to have a hearing. I think they're going to, if they issue some kind of a decision, which I think is doubtful at this point, because I think it makes more sense, if I'm doing a bell curve of possibilities, that they figure there's a hearing. Why are we going to get involved and micromanage something like this when he's going to have a hearing, he's going to hear the arguments, and he's going to make a ruling? And then, by the way, you've got a fulsome record upon which they can rule. And so I think at the end of the day, that I've got a slightly different opinion than I did when we recorded this a mere, what, Gary, 23 hours ago?
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, so that's the latest. And if there's more, who knows? Gary and I may jump right back in and do another 5 minute. What do we want to call these? A breaking news alert, Gary?
Yeah, absolutely. A freshener.
A freshener. Just a little, for those of you who drink, we're topping it off. Yeah. And now to our regularly scheduled Reasonable Doubt with Adam, myself, and the always on top of it, Gary.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get on a church bigger than a mandate. Get on. Welcome to the best hour in the universe. It's Reasonable Doubt. I'm Adam Kroll. It's Mark Karagas over there.
How are you, Adam?
I'm probably exceptionally well and confused and befuddled and whatever, like, simultaneously.
But first, let's start off. First, you're good.
I'm good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I'm very good.
Yeah.
But I am. I admit to being, let's see if we share the befuddlement. I am a little befuddled.
Yeah, so it's a weird time where you're not really living in the middle. You're having these flashes of sort of outrage. I can't believe they did this or they did that, and then it's back to what a time we're living in. This is crazy and incredible. So
I thought 2019 was crazy, but obviously 2020 beats the shit out of 2019.
Well, you are on top of everything. What do you think when now there's a lot of Kaepernick talk, and Goodell, made his apology. We didn't say Kaepernick per se, but then Al Sharpton brought up Cap. I mean,
at the funeral, the interesting thing on a number of levels, whether it's Cap or whether it's the unrest or whether it's police brutality. I mean, because we've been talking about it as long as – I mean, how long have we been on the air? 5 years or something? You and I, at least,
yeah,
with Reasonable Doubt. And we've talked about police brutality and clearly talked about – and you've talked about police brutality well before you and I did a show together. And I've been doing what are called 1983 civil rights cases for – at least 25 years of the almost 40 I'm practicing. And it's amazing to me now how all this stuff that you shout into the what seems like the wilderness. I mean, you can go on Twitter now and talk about qualified immunity and people know what you're talking about.
Right.
To me, that is astonishing, because when I tried to talk about that before, not only did nobody want to hear it, but you're almost like a Rain Man talking about qualified immunity. But now that it's entered the nomenclature
and
the zeitgeist. People understand that, wait a second. And we've been talking about, you always say, well, what would you do if you could wave your wand? I'd say I'd strip the immunities. I mean, that's this idea that somehow somebody can do something and get away with it, whereas I would be sued or you would be sued if you committed malpractice and somehow you get special treatment if you're a cop or if you're a prosecutor. And what's your favorite line? It can only go one way, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, it always – beware of people in charge. It's sort of like how people act when they have your money. You know what I mean? It's like I ordered some tile, feels like 100 years ago. I paid in full.
Up front. Yeah.
Yeah. And now
again,
it's like,
right?
I've had Matt call the guy. Hey, he's not returning my calls. I had to call him three times. Yeah, because he's been paid. He's in charge. You can say whatever you want. You can go, I paid. I deserve. I have the right to. Say all you want. Pay in full. See what happens. It's always my gift certificate things. Like you got a $100 gift certificate to the Gap and you buy $98 worth of jeans and they go, give me my $2 back. And they go, no.
Well,
not too, but they have it. So the police, the system, they're in charge. They're going to police themselves.
And it's
good luck.
Yeah, good luck. And then, by the way, the idea that you've been watching over in California, at least, probably 40 years of this progression of the pendulum swing, where and we've talked about it over the last couple of years, where all of a sudden the tough on crime and the criminalize everything and incarceration is the answer, which I've been screaming about. You right behind me is like, with your philosophy of why do we incarcerate all these people with our money, which I've always said it makes absolutely no sense except to feel good. And people kind of just let that happen. And eventually as a society, it's only a matter of time until at a certain point you can't just have this crazy unemployment. You can't just have people stay at home. You can't be lied to basically by the powers that be and then expect that everybody's going to just kind of in a docile fashion obey what's happening. That's why when I see people, I always – there's a part of me, and I've said this to you before, where sometimes I just want to break – I want to grab an Uzi and break a client out of the courthouse because I'm so frustrated because judges, you know, have their fingers up in the wind and do whatever is politically expedient for the moment or kind of as opposed to what they're supposed to do be as an umpire.
Well,
it's awful.
We were laughing in the past that talking about sort of flipping the script. You know, politically, we were laughing, said out loud a few times that comically the Democrats are circling the wagons around the CIA and the FBI and saying
exactly.
Nothing to see here. These are heroes. And it's then ironically the Republicans that are saying these guys are a dirty group of law enforcement guys that need to be torn apart and looked at. They're rotten from the root. Now that's the flip script. Now politically, tough on crime used to get you voted into office. Now soft on crime is going to get you voted in. And the folks with the black eyes in the past are the Kamala Harrises and the former prosecutors who are like literally used to run on, I was a tough, no-nonsense
Amy
prosecutor.
Klobuchar.
Right. Now it's like, wait a minute, that chick put that dude in prison once. She's out. So
well,
the script is flipped completely.
But you can't, and the script is a moving target. I mean,
right.
You've got Trump doing the First Step Act. Now it's law and order. That's his new tweet, law and order. It's a page straight out of Nixon's playbook. I mean, identical out of Nixon's playbook. And you could go back to what Nixon did. You go back to what George Bush the First did with Willie Horton and the campaign there, and kind of demonizing that the Willie Horton booking photo against Dukakis and
Dukakis
then all of that. Remember,
pardoned him or paroled him or whatever.
Yeah,
he went
a
off
week on furlough. He went out. He killed somebody. Next thing you know, he's getting interviewed. What would be your opinion if it was Kitty who was killed and blah blah
Kitty
blah.
Kitty Dukakis, yeah. Right? Is so. Kaepernick goes from a liability, possibly, to a blue chip recruit. I mean, let's try to really figure this one out. In the past, the coaches, the owners, or whatever, they went, that guy can play, you know, as good as, you know, each team has a starter and a backup. There's, I don't know, 32 quarterbacks or whatever.
Right, wait, 32 in the league.
32
right.
In the league. And
teams.
And he'll, you know, he'd fall somewhere in between those guys. But we're not going to have him because he's a distraction or because he's going to bring negative press or he's going to hurt sales or whatever it is. Now, the negative press would now sort of go to positive press, and the hurting the sales would go to selling out a game he was starting in. Not that they don't sell out anyway, but you know what I mean. There'd be a premium on a ticket. You could imagine Colin Kaepernick starting a game in the NFL. The TV viewing ratings for that would be like the Super Bowl and the Oscars, you know, put together. Oscars of yore, the new Oscars don't get any fucking looks. But the point is this: the conversation and. I believe that businesses are not good or bad. You know, we think Subarus are made with love. We think, you know, right. I always laugh that the same company makes attack helicopters for the Japanese army. But okay, we ascribe these personalities, but they're businesses. They want to make money. If they think Kaepernick's going to hurt the bottom line, he's not on the team. If it's going to help the bottom line, well, that's a different story. So now where are we at?
I just think that you have to sit and watch how things unfold. I mean, there is a natural kind of progression, and we are in. Look, I always think of Muhammad Ali. I mean, Muhammad Ali's career. having lived it, and I assume – you know, I've never talked to you about this because you're a boxer and have been a boxing fan for many years. Do you remember in real time what happened to Muhammad Ali? I mean, were you
– the Vietnam War and Islam and, you know, being stripped for 3 years, I think, maybe of his title and all
and
that.
Then facing – you know, serious jeopardy too.
Right.
I mean, there were charges. I think a sentence went all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court, and he was not lionized until many years later.
Right,
I mean, many years later. In fact, you know, you could make the argument that it was only when he became kind of doddering in terms of his appearance and inability to speak that, you know, America said, okay, now we can embrace him. You know, he doesn't scare us as much because he's not yelling at us or he's not telling truths that we don't want to hear. And I think you've seen part of, like everything else, I think what you've seen in the last 4 years, I mean, from 2016 to 2020, what a sea change in 4 years, right?
When did he take the first
2016.
Must have been on September, October, something of that season,
yeah, Gary
that year.
Gary will find it.
So what
– And I think at first.
September 1st. And what is the – and as they always say, you know, time flies when you're fighting in the streets with your neighbors.
Yes. So,
but realistically, you know, there's stuff you know, there's stuff you're guessing, there's stuff you can't talk about. But realistically, what are we thinking about?
I just think, and I've said it before, I think he, to a certain degree, is being vindicated, and I think there's a.
But
there's
does he something. Want to play?
Oh, well, he's said it repeatedly, and I think Ben has been out there.
Boring cop
has been saying it repeatedly. So yeah, I think there's no question about it.
Is there? Well, so now what are the prospects? Because
you'd think at a certain point, you know, the backdrop against this is the NFL has. Their own, you know, I think about Eric Reed, who's also free agent, got a great contract after he took a what I consider to be a rather paltry contract just to prove himself. And I've talked about Eric repeatedly. What people don't know is that Eric only got an offer after Eric, when was asked the question, would you take a knee? And he says, it depends. And that was all it took for him to get an offer. I mean, they were the kind of the hierarchy was so polaxed that they wouldn't do anything. And sure enough, that made its rounds very quickly. And sure enough, he got an offer. It wasn't what it should have been. I've always believed that there was an artificially suppressed market for safeties that particular year for a lot of reasons. And you saw that the following year when he got the long-term contract. But NFL contracts are completely illusory.
What's illusory mean?
In the sense that you'll see a contract, somebody gets signed for $30 million. But then when you get into it, in the $30 million may be $5 million up front guaranteed, and they can cut you tomorrow, and then, you know,
yeah, people,
they don't get it.
People don't understand contracts. I signed a morning radio contract for like a $10 million deal. And it was like, I don't know what it was, 2.4 or something the first year, and the next year was 3.1. And then the next year came around and they're like, well, we'll give you 1.7.
Yeah.
I was like, wait a minute. I thought we had that deal. Yeah, well, we did. But now we have this deal. And every single person you talk to goes, well, what do you have a contract for? And they go, I don't know.
Yeah. And it's the, you know, I have a banker. I swear, since Corona took over, and, you know, I'm heavily into the hospitality space. It feels like all I've been doing for the last 3 months is talking to bankers about bank covenants. And all they want to say is, well, what about this lease? What about that lease? I said, what are you talking about? We're in this world where the courts have basically shut down. They're still closed. I've got the Chief Justice who's suspending speedy trial rights and has put a moratorium on evictions. So it's not like I'm going to evict or get evicted. In fact, she tried just within the last 2 days to roll back the eviction ban. And, you know, the pressure was so unbelievable that they just left it in place. So a lease is like a contract on real property. Those get meaningless. And what are you going to do? You're going to buy all kinds of litigation. You understand the same thing. So when the NFL makes contract offers, part of what you have to see is, what money do you get up front? Number two, what money is guaranteed? What are all the terms of it? What is how does merchandise play in and everything else? So when I say it's illusory, you can never believe the contract that you see, and it's almost a complete bait and switch. $100 million contract. Yeah, we'll get into the weeds and fast forward in 18 months.
The merch, God, the camp merch. So who's guesses, predictions, thoughts? The season's coming up. Are these camps are opening slowly, right? I mean, this is the time. Start opening that camp.
I've been spectacularly wrong so far.
True.
And I admit it. So I'm not going to make another prediction. I think I'm so much more focused, I think, on this fight on qualified immunity for a zillion different reasons.
But camp wants in.
Yeah. I mean, you talk to anybody in the circle. Absolutely. I think there's just I think anybody is competitive who does what they want. I mean, I think of myself. If you reach a level where you can try a case anywhere, you want the highest level of competition.
No,
that's the case.
I think what people what they're not thinking about is, you know, I have things run through my head like, okay, this guy's a cult hero. The Colts could put him on the team. He could throw three picks in his first game and then status, you know, back down to mere mortal. But I also realize that at the end of the day, you want to try your cases. I want to tell my jokes. Kaepernick wants to throw his spirals. Like, at a certain point, it transcends this thing of like, what's the contract or whatever. It's what you want to do.
Interesting you say that, because I had an interaction this week with a young lawyer in my office who will remain nameless, who came in and said, you know, I want to start my own firm. I said, that's great, but how long have you been a lawyer? Because I swear you just passed the bar. And his response, I won't say the number of months, but it was not a year. And I said, you don't know anything. I mean, you literally don't know anything. I mean, you could go and start your own firm. You could go and try and do this, but you don't know anything. And why the hell would you want to do that? You're living at home. Your parents aren't, you know, they're taking care of everything. You've got the opportunity to literally be on any case that you want. I don't restrict people. I tell you, you know, my thing is, you want to be on a case, get in here and show me what you can do. And you can learn, you can do the rest. And that attitude just drives me crazy, because you have to drill it into people. They don't quite understand that it doesn't matter. I can tell you 40 years fast forward of doing this that at the end of the day, if you're good at what you do, you're going to make money. I mean, if money's your end goal, you're going to make money. You make money falling out of bed as long as you've honed your craft.
Yeah, and money doesn't need to be your end goal. Your end goal is you do it because that's what you do.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
And then obviously the money follows. I sound like a self-help book, but
no, we aren't self-help, but I'm going to tell you the same thing. I've got enough money. I think you would admit you've got enough money. And I think the sign of having enough money is you buy playthings, you buy toys, you know, adult toys. So you can say whatever you want to say. But at the end of the day, when you go to bed at night, you might buy something. You buy a new Porsche. I buy your Lamborghini. It feels good, but you still want to accomplish something. You still want to get a crowd. You want to have a crowd react to you. I wanted to try a case in front of a jury. I want to get a win. I want to persuade them. I want to fight against the government. I mean, there's a certain psychic gratification that it doesn't matter how much money you've got, which is, by the way, leads into my the my rant about inheritance, it's one of the things that I think is bad about inheritance, because I think inheritance takes away that kind of drive to accomplish.
Oh, 100%. And, you know, also, I was thinking, obviously, everyone is now forced to think about, you know, where they are in the New World Order and what they say and how they fit in. And, you know, I see what's going on. Like, I communicate with the Tucker Carlsons of the world. I understand they're after him. They're after his job. They're after his sponsors. And I get it. And I thought, but he has to tell the truth as he knows it, you know, and the truth, and I don't like this hoity-toity, my truth stuff, yeah, but what it is,
by the way, that's the ultimate cultural relativism, which people will denigrate, but then at the same time embrace. It's just that that's schizophrenic as well.
But you and I in a way are in the same business, which is definitely not a popularity contest
at all.
You have stuff you want to say. And
somebody tweeted at me, and I think I was drinking coffee at the time when I read it and laughed, that Adam had gotten a good line about Mark wanting to represent somebody. I forget who. Oh, the cop in Minnesota, so that he could go back to representing the most hated man in America. And, you know, I get it. I've often said it to you. You know, why would you ever take Harvey Weinstein? I said, well, I'd never have to go to one of Paulette's cocktail parties again. Right. You know, it's a built-in deal. But it's amazing. I was noticing yesterday. You're talking about Tucker because I saw all of the Tucker. You know, the horrible person thing. But you know, I. Client/partner Cube was getting it as well yesterday. Cube was being attacked for being anti-Semitic, which, if you know, Cube is one of the biggest jokes of all time. I mean, you know, his longtime manager and everybody he surrounds himself with is the opposite. And yet, somebody took an image that he retweeted and had an interpretation. And next thing you know, Cube is an anti-Semite, and you can't follow Cube. You got to unfollow Cube. I mean, that it's just, it happens, and it happens so quick. It's like I wasn't on Twitter. I got on Twitter, and all of a sudden it was Cube hate and it was Tucker hate.
Yeah. And so you have to make a choice between telling the truth as you know it, and or possibly getting paid in the future. Now, for me, it's an easy choice because at the end of the day, you really just have your dignity. Whatever people think of whether Cube or Tucker or Mark or me is right or wrong, that's not the point. It's not the opinion. It's that, is it your opinion? And when I turn on the TV now, a lot of these news anchors and a lot of these folks on these weekend shows literally just bring in the minister or the representative from Black Lives Matter or the guy who represents the cop unions, and they just bloviate for 3 minutes. And at the end, they go,
yeah.
All right, we're going to go to commercial. And I thought, what do we need you for? Billy Bush does more commentary
it's a ringmaster. I mean, it's astonishing.
No follow-ups, no probes, no drill down, no here's my opinion, just
right. Yeah. And a bobbing head. Yeah, that's
right.
All I don't understand. You know, Tucker, I have watched on occasion and agreed with, shockingly enough, and said, you know, okay, I understand what he's saying. I don't disagree. I'd say the lion's share of the time I disagree vehemently. I mean, you know, it's just not. But he makes an argument. I mean, part of what I do in a courtroom every day is I listen to prosecutors who I couldn't disagree with them more. That doesn't mean that I want to go ISIS on them as soon as we walk out of the courtroom. I understand they've got, as you say, they've got their truth. The only time I get really out of control angry is when there's some kind of, when they're not playing fair, so to
right.
speak, you know?
Yeah, I'm, as long as I think what you're saying is what you're thinking, then I'm utterly fine with it. It's why I don't really, I'm an atheist. I don't have problems with religious people. I believe that they believe it, And when I believe they believe it, then I just keep walking. So let's go to what's in the news. I'll tee it up.
Yeah, would you tee it up? Because I really want to talk about, because we spent so much time on it, and we'll tease it, is Flynn. Because yes. There is news on that.
All right. We'll talk about Flynn and Barr and everyone else first. I'll tell you about Method Men. You heard us talking about them. Last week, fresh approach to grooming, staying clean and fresh should be fuss-free. And it is with Method Men. I think we're all using it here. I actually just put on the deodorant today.
That's right. I just saw a tube? It's not a tube. It's more like a
Container. Yeah, but container. It smells delightful. It's great.
I picked it up because it did smell good.
Got body washes, and it's got the deodorant, nature-inspired fragrances, plant-based, lather up quick, rinse clean. Stuff's good. I got the Sea Surf and the Cedar Cypress scents as well. The Sea Surf is the body wash, and the Cedar Cypress is the deodorant. It's good. It's well packaged. It's good stuff. And you can save 15% and try it out. See if you don't love it. And I know you will. Send me a tweet if you don't love it, or send me a tweet if you do love it. Save 15%. Use the code DOUBT when you buy online. Methodmen.com. That's methodmen.com. Save that 15%. Use DOUBT. Yes, Mark.
So, Flynn, as we're taping this, who knows what will happen on Friday, which is when the D.C. Circuit has oral arguments on the case. Setting it up for you is that the Flynn's lawyer, Sidney Powell, has taken an interlocutory, which basically is a writ, to the D.C. Circuit to ask them to order that Judge Emmett Sullivan dismiss the case on the motion of the Department of Justice. Well, Emmett Sullivan, the judge, Judge Sullivan, had appointed Judge Gleason, who's retired from Brooklyn, ex-AUSA, who I think, if I'm not mistaken, I don't know him, but I know of him, was when he was an AUSA prosecutor, John Gotti. And
Wolf of Wall Street, Jordan Belfort.
Wow.
Well, everything he touches turns movie. We'll send him uppity.
Yeah.
He wrote a very lengthy opinion and came down to pretty much where I thought he would. We talked about this before, and people said, well, the government wants to dismiss. Why shouldn't Judge Sullivan do that? And I said, Judge Sullivan is going to have a problem like most federal district court judges that I know. One of the reasons that in federal court that when you enter a plea – and you do a factual basis. They do that for a reason. They have you raise your hand, they put you under oath, and then they say, okay, you have entered into a plea agreement with your lawyer, right? Yes. That was knowing and voluntary, correct? Yes. And you weren't under the influence of anything. There were no secret promises, secret handshakes, or anything else. Yes, Your Honor, that's right. Okay, now I'm going to ask you a series of questions. And they go through a colloquy of an hour to 2 hours. And I've been there, I can't tell you how many times, because inevitably what happens is they get to what's called a factual basis. And the judge will say, tell me in your own words what you did, why you're pleading guilty. Because they don't let you do even though I've always thought they should under what's called an Alford plea, they don't let you just say, I'm doing this because it's in my best interest. I'm not really guilty. You have to state or articulate a factual basis. And that's what happened with Flynn. He articulated not once but twice a factual basis for his plea under oath. So the judge is relying on that. Now, as an aside, why do they have you do that? Because the judges also get inundated with what are called 2255s, which are writs of habeas corpus. Years later, when somebody's been sentenced and they don't like their sentence and they're sitting there and their lawyer or their family has abandoned them, and they fill out a form that says, my lawyer lied to me, he promised this, that, or the other thing. Mm-hmm. I wasn't really guilty, blah, blah, blah. This is a way of trying to shut down that floodgate. Mm-hmm. So I had no doubt that the judge, the same judge who, by the way, excoriated the Department of Justice in the Senator Ted Stevens prosecution for not turning over exculpatory evidence, this is Emmett Sullivan, was not going to just say, wait a second here, you came in here not once but twice, told me that you committed this offense, and I actually made the statement on the record that arguably you betrayed the flag, based on what the Department of Justice also told him. So he appoints the Judge Gleason, retired, who comes back with the report and says, don't prosecute or don't do anything for perjury, but you can take into effect that he's now denying what he said when you sentence him. Mm-hmm. That's where we are at. The circuit court will hear arguments on Friday. This drops on Saturday. And then they will rule and they will issue what's called a writ. My prognostication, we haven't heard the oral arguments yet, and maybe I'll redo this, but I'm going to guess it's going to be 2-1 ordering the judge to dismiss the case. It's going to be my guess.
Would Trump pardon him?
If they didn't, yes, I think he would. And I think everybody knows that. There's an element here of kabuki theater, because what Judge Gleason has said is that the arguments that are made by the Department of Justice as to why they now are dismissing are basically pretextual. And by the way, there's some truth in that, because I could make that argument that the DOJ makes in this case on virtually every federal case I have. Virtually everything that the DOJ said in this case, they never turn over raw notes, which they did in this case, which showed stuff. They rarely will turn over or rarely appoint a independent prosecutor, which means a prosecutor from another jurisdiction, to look at what this prosecutor was doing. I wish I could have that.
What are they going to do with Roger Stone?
Roger Stone, I don't think they're going to let him languish. I think that Trump will pardon, if not now, if he's not reelected. Either way, if he's not reelected on November 3rd and he hasn't done it before then, he'll do it on his way out the door. Which Clinton did. Famously, I had Susan McDougall, and the one case I didn't represent her on, Bill Clinton pardoned her on the way out the door. And I think that if he is reelected, he could do it on by November 5th if he hasn't done it before, because what the hell does he care? He's got the Department of Justice wind at his back, and he would do it then.
Right. He's not going to do it before the election, because
I would be surprised if he did it before the election. It makes no sense.
It falls under the heading of what's in it for me kind of thing. So then Barr and Comey and FBI and papers. Gary, I think there may have been some new papers dropped even today that keep declassifying things, that keep dropping things, or they unredact things, or
well,
what,
this
what
is what's so frustrating, because I admit to being schizophrenic about it. Politically, it drives me crazy, because the only reason I react this way, that I think it's getting done, is because these are people who are aligned with the president. As a defense lawyer, this is the kind of stuff that I file motions. I'm filing motions right now on my Utah case. I want this kind of stuff. I want further discovery. I want them to turn over the raw notes. I want to see all of these things that I think would show the same kind of untoward conduct. And it's frustrating. And I've talked to many criminal defense lawyers. That's the conundrum we're in. I mean, on one hand, it sets a precedent, but it's not a binding precedent, because DOJ is I think the argument would be in the criminal defense community, they're doing it selectively. And that if they were doing this across the board, I think to quote Scalia, he would be the poster boy for the criminal defense bar, which is what Scalia said about himself. And it was true. But in this case, it reeks of selective non-prosecution. And that
what
is
Barr's what's doing.
Yeah, that's it's because if he was doing that uniformly, if I saw him saying, wait a second here, somebody's saying, maintaining their innocence, I'm going to make it DOJ policy, FBI, turn over your raw notes, especially because, as we've talked about many, many episodes ago, FBI has got a policy of not recording statements.
Right.
So you never know what you get in the final report is you don't even get the raw notes.
I know we're always talking about body cams now, and I'm a big believer in body cams. And the thing about body cams for cops, there's a lot of data it's kind of a two-way street. There's a lot of false allegations against cops. There's a lot of, hey, that guy put his hands on me and that kind of stuff. And it didn't go down that way. There's a lot of that. And the body cams protect from that as well.
And by the way, I think it should be an offense. It's clearly, if I did it, I always say, if the defense lawyer does it, would it be a crime? If I have some piece of evidence, or I know there's going to be some piece of evidence, and I deliberately deep six it, that's an obstruction in a criminal case. It's spoliation in a civil case. If a cop goes into something and turns off his body cam and then all hell breaks loose, that to me is a evidence of premeditation, spoliation, and obstruction of justice. Why isn't that a criminal offense?
I mean, obviously there's an implied guilt when you go shut it off, just like
you shut it off before something bad happens. That to me, there's no better evidence right. of malice or intent.
But as I'm bringing it back to the FBI, not recording their interviews in 2020, that sounds insane to me. Why would it, in a world where everything is captured, the casual thing, you know, you go out and watch a stand-up comedian, half the people are taping it out in the crowd. You're going to sit down and interview Hillary Clinton or whomever, and you're not going to capture it officially? It's like the judge dismissing the stenographer in a court case. You know what I mean? Like, we get the gist of what he's saying.
I've heard your arguments. Now, before I rule, would this stenographer please leave the courtroom? I mean, it makes absolutely no sense, number one. Number two, the only reason they get away with it, I will tell you, if people,
what would their argument be?
Their argument, they don't have a really good argument. It doesn't even
have to be good. But what I'm saying is I'm very fond of when Dr. Drew says, I was walking through the airport and a woman came up and started screaming in my face. I always go, what would she say? Like, how would she describe this thing? And then you get a little more nuanced thing, meaning somebody wants to keep this going at the FBI. Why? Would they say people tend to it influences the way they speak?
No, I mean, anything I've like never what? Heard. And I know what you mean. I mean, I always try to get into the other person's shoes so I can understand their arguments, so I can at least try to persuade them that they're wrong. I've never heard an argument that makes any sense. It's certainly not resources because, by the way, we all know the federal government has unlimited resources when it comes to criminal prosecution at the Department of Justice. I mean, I've seen them flown in witnesses for absolutely no reason. I mean,
privately, probably.
Yeah, right. I mean, it's just astonishing. So it's not that. It's not resources. It's not that it somehow saves them time because, by the way, if you recorded the interview, you wouldn't need to take written notes. You could just take the recorded interview, have it transcribed, and turn that over. Think of all the money you would save. You wouldn't have the officer having to go over his notes. You wouldn't have the agent having to memorialize them in a 302 or something else. It makes no sense. There isn't any credible argument for why they wouldn't record.
It's funny. We have a note taker with the FBI when everyone, by the way, everyone's cell phone that they probably check at the door is more than capable of recording this conversation when you hit that app. Secondly, but it's also weird that in 2020, we got a guy with a steno pad making notes, the number two pencil, and then you go into the courtroom and we won't allow cameras. So you got a guy drawing everybody. Like, what year is it?
Well, I'll give in the federal courts, the circuit courts have done, I think, a very good job now, and my guess is it will remain the circuit, meaning not at the trial level but at the appellate level. They now do YouTube or live streaming. Ninth Circuit does. The Eighth Circuit the Eighth Circuit I thought was great. I did the argument there last year. We did it in the law school with 400 law students there, which I thought, this is the way it should be. Why are you hiding this? This is a great argument. Ironically, last year, it was about that kid who was trying to commit suicide, said drop the gun, and they shot him. So I thought that was a good argument to have at a law school. Let 400 would-be lawyers see what the law really means, see how it acts out. The Tenth Circuit one that I did last month, I'm still waiting on a on a decision on that qualified immunity. Boy, we were kind of fighting that fight ahead of the curve. That's another one. That was on tape, yeah, and they did that, and people could phone in or they could go to YouTube and watch it. I don't understand why we don't want that. I would think that that's helpful. It demystifies things.
I agree. Do you have summarized some of those papers that dropped, Gary? Or did they drop
today? While he's doing that, and speaking of legal... LegalZoom.
Yeah.
Oh, a whole new world, brave new world, with new challenges. Boy, isn't that the fact. If you need legal help to overcome yours, there's LegalZoom. By the way, I was actually on a call today on a business that I'm talking about starting, and I talked to a lawyer who's in this space, and he and I both agreed. I mean, this is a guy who does nothing but food, beverage, and hospitality, and we decided on an LLC, and I said, is there any reason why I wouldn't go to LegalZoom? He says, no, absolutely none. I'd charge you 10 times as much.
Right.
And so then also wondering the best way to protect your family or thinking of starting a business. Don't let legal questions hold you back. LegalZoom helps with the right solutions. They've been doing it for over 19 years. Protect your family with a will, living trust, or start a business with a DBA, LLC, or no, a nonprofit. I put my money where my mouth is. We're going to do an LLC. You get started online. If you need guidance, they've got a network of attorneys that can provide advice. Since they aren't a law firm, guess what, Adam? You not only won't have to leave home, but you won't get charged by?
The billable hour.
The evil billable hour. LegalZoom, right, Gary?
That's absolutely right. Visit LegalZoom.com today to take care of some important things you need to get done. That's LegalZoom.com. LegalZoom, where life meets legal.
So did you find anything, Gary? Because I think in a nutshell, Trump felt like he was fucked with for the last 3 years, and now he's got Barr to turn the table and go after those who fucked with him, if I put it in layman's terms. Yes.
I think that's an apt analogy. In my quick reading of this this article that I found while we're recording here, basically it looks like an annex to the Steele dossier was declassified today, and it basically reveals that the FBI was not very forthcoming when they were trying to establish their FISA warrants and stuff like that, and that they knew at the time that the Steele dossier was being co-financed by the DNC and the campaign of Hillary Clinton, and they deliberately, it appears, omitted that information. And it also appears that while they knew that Steele had strong distaste for Trump and his potential to become president, they also omitted that fact and just decided to try to paint him more like an executive of an intelligence company. So it just seems like they left quite a bit out that.
Right. So,
And for those of us who practice federal criminal law, this is not breaking news. I can't tell you how many times I've seen applications or things that were left on the cutting room floor. I mean, that's one of my arguments in closing arguments to juries is, you know, they told you all this stuff in opening and they didn't tell you, they left out this, and this, and the agents will do the same thing. And it's astonishing that it's allowed to go on. But you know why it's allowed to go on? Number one, because the federal conviction rate is in the upper 90s. I mean, it is higher. The conviction rate in federal court is off the charts. I literally something like 98 out of 100 cases, if you go in federal court, that get filed are going to end up in conviction. So it's shooting fish in a barrel.
It always suggests to me in any transaction that the persons or the entities' motives will present themselves. So if you said, well, here's what we do. We move ahead with our prosecution if we find that this document is worthy of moving forward with, you know, if it compels us to move forward with prosecution, then we'll do it. If it doesn't, then you won't. And you go, okay, so let's go look at that document and see if that what it suggests that or not. When you then look at the document and it doesn't suggest that, and you move forward anyway, well, now I know what you're doing. You would like to prosecute. You would like to move forward.
And it's exactly right. And then,
and there's a version of that where you look at it, and it does compel you to move forward, and you say, nothing to see here. There's that version. But either way, we're not getting a sort of Lady Justice holding the scales with the blindfold on. We're getting folks, entities, individuals who they have an agenda. They would like to do this.
And and unfortunately, that's been apparently, as far as anybody can tell, it's always been the case. I was thinking when you said he's now got an attorney general like Barr. Remember, John Kennedy had his brother as attorney general. Obama had Eric Holder as his attorney general. George W. brought in two guys who were famously, aligned with him. So, and Clinton's probably downfall is that he had Janet Reno as opposed to having maybe at the time Eric Holder, who was an assistant to Janet Reno.
Well, Janet couldn't be swayed by Bill's wily ways and raw sexuality. She was professional. She was the last of the pros. And his magic touch didn't work on her, whereas the other women would just turn into drawn butter. Somehow, Janet was able to stave that off.
She was able to withstand that in the wild.
Evidently. She must have had some kind of constitution. She was probably married for many years.
She always reminded me of Mrs. Scaramusa, who was my teacher in eighth grade at Foothill Intermediate School. I always thought that Janet Reno and Mrs. Scaramusa were very similar personalities.
Personalities. I was yapping on my show the other day. I said, it's too bad Janet's not still here to go bust up that Seattle commune.
Oh, my God.
She'd fucking roll right in there.
She'd wake the shit out of that, wouldn't she?
Wake the fuck out of us, guys.
Do you realize I used Waco the other day and nobody in the room knew what I was talking about?
Really?
Yeah. I mean, they were all in their 20s, but nobody knew what I was talking about. They looked at me like, and I said, how can you not remember David Koresh, Waco, Janet Reno? How can you not remember that?
The most shocking part about that is that there was a very prominent miniseries starring Taylor Kitsch that came out about 2 years ago.
I couldn't believe it. Nobody knew. I said, I said, you guys are wacko for not knowing about Waco. Bad pun. But it just drove me crazy.
She would go in there like DiCaprio with the flamethrower on it, with the flamethrower, full DiCaprio, like one eye patch on, full Tarantino. And just torch that whole place. She probably wouldn't even call in the military. She'd probably just do it herself, right? She'd get the DiCaprio's fire pack.
I don't think she had, I could be wrong. Gary, was her background, I'm trying to remember. I don't think she had a federal background. I think she was from Florida and had a state court background, I think there's a, where you were raised in the criminal justice system speaks volumes and is very predictive of you, whether you were a state court prosecutor or federal prosecutor.
Yeah, she was state's attorney for Miami-Dade County from 78 to 93 and then straight into attorney general.
Exactly. That would make sense. I mean, that's, and by the way, Florida.
Yeah, Germany or Florida. Did she, so what do we think, well, the qualified immunity now, the politicians are, all jumping now onto something that they've basically been ignoring and looking the other way upon for decades. Now all of a sudden they're all huge champions for, rights.
And by the way, we were mocking. Take a look at some of these opinions. Some of the U.S. Supreme Court opinions about qualified immunity, the lone dissenter is Clarence Thomas, who's talking about that this is a judicially created doctrine in response to the Civil Rights Act. And finally, people on the left have come around to it. But this was originally – that's what's so crazy schizophrenic about the criminal justice system is sometimes the people who make the most sense are the ones who are farthest to the right in the criminal justice system, except when they get kind of hoodwinked, a la Nixon and Law and Order, or when they get hoodwinked here in California and start to, lock them up, throw away the key, or Biden and the 1993 and 4 bills, which were a horrific. I mean, that was you know, kind of Democrat blessed and has left a lasting problem in the criminal justice system.
So what are we going to do? There's bills going through Congress. Everyone's going to adopt them, right?
It's actually a race right now. There's a number of cases. Last time I looked earlier in the week, I don't think the U.S. Supreme Court had granted cert though yet. But there was one out of the Fifth Circuit and one out of the Eighth. And those are pending at the U.S. Supreme Court. If they grab one of those cases or both, then we could get a decision from the U.S. Supreme Court that would overrule this judicially created doctrine. At the same time, they could make the argument, no, if that's what Congress wants to do, leave it for Congress. And there is a bill now that is, I think somebody called it tripartisan. Was that you?
But that's good.
Yeah, the tripartisan, meaning both an independent Republicans and Democrats are saying stripping of qualified immunity. Qualified immunity has never made any sense to me, because qualified immunity basically says, unless I can point the court, the judge, to a case that says this is unconstitutional activity, then unless I can do that, then the cop wasn't on notice and you can't sue him. And so I'm talking about cases where they kill somebody. And unless there's a factual situation that resembles it on all fours, as we say in the law, you can't proceed on your case. And that, to me, is ludicrous.
Well, what about the qualified immunity of Congress and politicians? It doesn't come up, but they have it as well, right? Yeah,
exactly. And they've got it, I think, originally in two or three of the bills that they imposed upon businesses. They had immunity themselves, and that's not right either. I mean, it's, you know, there is a certain hubris both in the White House and in the halls of Congress. If a law is going to apply, it should apply across the board.
Yeah. Well, do you think any of this sort of rah-rah strip the cops of the qualified immunity, you think there's going to be some voices saying, well, what about your qualified immunity?
Yeah, I think there will be. I think that the problem is that they do have a privileges and immunities clause that's written into the Constitution. I don't think they could ever strip that. So there's always going to be rights that flow out of that. But there are other kinds of things that I think will come about. And a lot of this is going to be driven in 4 months by the election. I mean, the election is going to determine which way this country goes in a lot of this stuff.
You know who are laughing their asses off right now as I think about it? Russia, Putin. This notion that we found out, you know, months ago, that really what they wanted us to do is argue and fight amongst ourselves, that it really wasn't so much about Clinton and it wasn't so much about Trump. It was like, we hope they start a race war over there and burn the whole place to the ground.
Yeah, it's a Charlie Manson-style helter-skelter, except on a international scale.
Right, and that was kind of what they were hoping for. And if you think about it, a more realistic or a more ambitious goal for a foe is not to have a peaceful transition from one power, one form of government, or one party to the next party, but to just have a constant battle in the streets amongst their own. And what was nutty about it, and Gary, you can look into that a little bit. Gary, thanks. I didn't know if you heard me or not, but all this data came out 2 years ago that they weren't even buying stories on, you know, Facebook and Twitter and bots and all that. Most of it wasn't negative Trump or pro Clinton or vice versa. It was a lot of race related stuff. And they were trying to sow a lot of division because they must have known, as long as we're all, you know, if we're all fighting, that'll weaken us.
I think that was exactly, I was making the argument a couple of years ago, and when we were looking at whether to sue Facebook for a group of people, it became apparent to us that the lion's share of the analytics was this fomenting of that Russia understood, apparently, somebody understood and they adopted it, that America has a race problem and a race divide, and the best way to kind of to kind of shake it up is to exploit that and to do these crazy things that they did. And, you know, you get you encourage the white supremacy crowd. You encourage the ultimate, leftists who get fired up as well. And you get, as you say, you get the result you want.
I think, Gary, if you found that article, I'd be interested in hearing it.
I'm still reading it now. I'm still reading it now, so just give me a moment. I was hearkening back to a story I did hear a few years ago where they were the Russian troll factories were accused of setting up like in-person events kind of across the street from each other, like a Second Amendment rally on one corner and Black Lives Matter kind of catty corner, and just not necessarily doing anything beyond setting up the events, but just trusting that the American people that showed up would probably create their own chaos from there.
Well, the thing I always found funny about it is I learned about it just watching the news, and the news reported it. They said, well, they found a very small percent. Maybe there was a dollar amount to how much they spent on ads or pro Hillary or pro Trump or negative Hillary, negative Trump. But it turns out all the lion's share of the money went into fomenting this anger and race relations. And then they go, okay, now in other news, cops are slaughtering black people in their homes. And I'd be like, oh, we're moving right ahead with this. Like, they literally said what they were trying to get us to do, and then they went right into doing it. So it's interesting times we're living in. On a happy note, Mark, I went for my twins' birthday, I went to Carousel.
Oh, did you really?
The Glendale restaurant.
Very good. Dine in?
I had my kids and a couple of friends of the wife over at the house, and I announced, we have a deal over at my house, which is I'll buy, I'll fly. Now, it's not quite the deal you had with your roommates and pizzas back then, but we like to
adopt. Right. You evolved.
So I came here, and on the way home on a Sunday night, I swung by Carousel, of course. Famously, I don't think I'd eaten in there since I was there with System of a Down, and the guy was explaining to us we couldn't order our appetizers.
Would you go with Serge?
We'd have to eat in the parking lot. What I was told. That was some of the greatest. That provided that exchange when me and Drew ate with System of a Down at Carousel, great restaurant in Glendale. That provided the first 45 minutes of Loveline that
I can imagine. I can imagine. If you, I many years ago, I spent an evening with System of a Down at some Armenian National event, and there is no lack of entertaining stories that comes out of that.
I think, the last time I saw John, the drummer, we were at Burbank taking a Jet Suite X into Vegas or something, and he was going, I don't know, maybe he moved to Nevada, maybe.
Well, Serge at some point was living down under, I think, but
oh,
then
really?
He pops up, yeah, and he pops up periodically in Armenia, and I see him on my feed and things like that, but I haven't seen him. I think he did, if memory serves right, I think when Anthony Bourdain, one of his last episodes, had gone to Armenia, and I think Serge met him there. That was one of my big regrets that I was not on that trip.
Mm.
That would have been on my bucket list.
Anyway, delectable food and service. All right. tonight, I'm going to be in Nashville at Zany's doing a couple of shows, and I'm doing my book signing today at 4:30 at Zany's in Nashville. So we're going to get the book before the book's out. It's dropping on Tuesday, but it's coming out. Mike August got him to send a box of them over there, so you guys can be the first to have them there. Stand-up shows all over the place. You go to AdamCarolla.com, and I'm your emotional support animal, navigating our all-woke, no-joke culture, no holds barred in this one. What do you got, Mark?
Oh, I'm happy to report that I sued the governor last week, and before the judge could hear our restraining order, he opened up hotels. So as you listen to this, V Palm Springs, which was our lead plaintiff, is open. You can go down there. Casa Tropicana in San Clemente, you know, Orange County, they just basically, the sheriff said, I'm not enforcing this. They're open. And right. Capri in Southampton is open. So go visit one of the hotels. Put your help out small business and hospitality.
So till next time, Adam Kroll for Mark Garagos saying mahala.
Thanks for listening to Reasonable Doubt. Tune in next Saturday for an all-new episode. This is Corolla Digital.